morning. Thank you for having me. I should say that this is not supposed to be some kind of a mystery book that is coming out. It does have a title, and the title is Yoo-Hoo, Why You Matter and How to Deal with It. It's a book on Christian identity, not specifically to mothers, although it's relevant to mothers, but like my other two books were about mothering, more particularly, this one is about the identity in Christ is essentially what the book is about. So the thing it doesn't have yet is a finished cover, which is why there's no pictures of it with a finished cover. But it does have a title, and there is a book, I promise, it's coming out. So, but thank you so much for having me here today. It is always an encouragement and a privilege to talk to so many mothers, women who are taking their calling seriously and pursuing Christ through the many obstacles that we will all encounter on our way. Our job, ultimately, as mothers, is to bring our children faithfully with us as we daily press on heavenward, right? This is the goal. I chose the title, A Mother's Progress, as a nod to John Bunyan's wonderful work, The Pilgrim's Progress, which I'm sure you have all at least heard of, if not read, and seen all over the place, written in the 1600s, still wildly applicable today, still incredibly on topic with the Christian life. It is, of course, an allegory. It's an allegory of a man's conversion and then his journey through his life to the celestial city, which is, of course, heaven. I reference this because this is exactly what we're doing, right? This is what our job is to be daily, faithfully pressing onwards towards heaven. From the time, this is just background about me, but from the time that I was young, I have loved children, loved them. I married at 22, had my first baby at 23, and the Lord blessed us with a very wildly productive first few years of our marriage. He gave us a second daughter 18 months after the first one, and then 18 months after that, twins, a boy and a girl. And so even though we knew we wanted children and we loved children, it was still four children, 3 years old, barely 3 years old and under. That was a time that I felt like I was finding out things about motherhood that I had never even heard tell of. I had no idea. So with those four children, 3 years old and younger, I began to notice that there was really something missing from all of the teaching and encouragement that I heard for mothers and from mothers. On the one hand, and of course you have to realize this was my twins are almost 11, so this was a little while ago. So it was before a lot of the kind of books that are out for mothers. It was a lot less out there at that time. It's kind of almost like saying before the internet, before that, when we were still saving articles from Martha Stewart because we thought we would never be able to find out otherwise how to clean marble or something. Or I did that. Maybe you all didn't, but I did that. Like, I might need this later. I need to keep this. But what was happening at that time, I felt like, is on the one hand, there were these sentimental, motherhood is a precious gift, you are in charge of shaping eternal souls. Like, have you recently stood in your Battenberg lace collar dress under a rose arbor with your child in your arms and your sunbonnet resting beside you? Like, in this hazy pink land where we shelter and shepherd our children. You know, like, it's this glorious calling of motherhood, even if you didn't like the lace collars. But it was still it was like this imaginary land where you're a mother. And then on the other hand was just ugly complaining, right? Like, either we're pretending that motherhood is nothing like what motherhood is actually like, or we're all majoring on the ugly realities of motherhood. This is all snot and diapers. You know, like, it's what it is, like, those were seem to be the options. We either pretend that this is there's no obstacle, you know, that there's no obstacles. This is nothing but sweetness, or this is all obstacles. There's nothing wonderful here. And it seemed to me that the teaching on motherhood was either 100% fake in the interest of preserving the glory of motherhood, or it was 100% ugly in the interest of being real, right? Like, you're one or the other. But I wondered, is it not possible that we could be both realistic and joyful? Like, how can we not do these things at the same time? Could it be glorious and normal at the same time? Is it possible? Is it possible to look at the messes and the difficulties and the months of vomiting and the sleepless nights and still see joy and glory and beauty and purpose in eternal souls. Can't, if we believe it's actually what God is doing, then that's what we have to do. We actually have to, if we believe the truth that these are eternal people, that this is a glorious calling, that we have to be able to see it at the same time as we're seeing the reality of our actual work. I believe that Christian mothering is only as glorious as it is faithful, right? That glory is not independently in the work that we're doing. It's not in the piles that you're sweeping up unless you're faithfully doing so, joyfully in the Lord, right? That the glory is present when we are being obedient. That those two things have to go together. In other words, the glory comes out when we obey in inglorious situations, when it is totally inglorious and yet we still honor our God. Right? That is what is glorious. When you're willing to do these things, when you're up in the night ingloriously, not looking beautiful or like anyone in their right mind would paint a portrait of that and say, motherhood, like, doesn't it just cause your heart to soar when you see this? You know, that's, most of us have not lived through very many moments where you would really be worthy of that kind of thing. Right? But that doesn't mean that there was no glory. It just means that that false idea of what the glory is has confused us. The glory is not far removed from normal life, like it appears to be, like as far as normal life appears to be removed from those paintings of rose arbors. You all know the ones I'm talking about, don't you? There's usually a picket fence, and there's a lot of romance in those things. But the glory is rather in the normalness, in the faithfulness, in the daily steps of obedience, right? And we've all had that opportunity, right? All of us have had that opportunity to obey, to be joyful, to be faithful, to keep on doing our duty when we did not feel like it and when the situation did not feel inspiring, right? When it does not feel like, oh, look at these children. What I would love to do for them is clean this house and make them another dinner that they might not like. Like, this is, it doesn't feel glorious, but that doesn't take away the glory of the situation. So this phase of my life as a young mother, and I should say, it was those first four, maybe five. It's a little wild. After that, the pace was a lot more reasonable. So now, even though I have a three-year-old, we feel well out of the totally wild phase of, but this phase of my life, when no one in the house could be trusted to find their pajamas, right? Nobody knows what they did with their shoes. Nobody, you know, there was just no help anywhere from anyone. Actually, I do have to say, someone told me once, because my twins were third and fourth children, and someone asked me who had twins on her first. She said, well, how old was your oldest when you had the twins? And I said, well, she had just turned three, like a couple weeks before. She said, oh, good, so you had lots of help. I don't think you know what you're talking about. That was not help. Someone bringing you a diaper periodically did not make up for it. Anyways, this was a very spiritually rich time for me, even though it was a really difficult time in many ways. It was a physically difficult time. I know I've written about this. Some of you probably have seen me talk about this, but this was a time when I kept telling my husband I thought smoking looked really good. Tells you where I was mentally, that this is like, that looks awesome. It was the winter, and I had nursing twins and two toddlers, and we were inside all the time, and we would get in the car, and it was the dark, you know, it's like, what, 4 o'clock, but pitch dark outside, and we'd be driving, and I would see someone, they're always by themselves out on the porch. They'd be standing out there just, and I'd be like, Dad just looks really good. I did not give in to this. But it was a time that was so physically difficult. It was nursing infants, and I remember I would take the garbage out and actually stand by the garbage like, okay. And then think like, I'm going back in, you know, like coming back into the house. It was a very, very difficult time. It was challenging, but it was so spiritually rich. I was totally overwhelmed with babies. And like I said, I always loved babies. And so there was this real awareness in my own life when I was tempted to be you know, dissatisfied with the situation that I knew I was being inconsistent with my own beliefs, right? I know that I believe children are a blessing. I believe this is a gift from God. I believe him. And yet right now I'm being tempted to not act in accordance with that, to act like someone who thinks this is a grief to me, you know, or a burden instead of a blessing. Like this is, and as my brother is fond of saying, even baskets full of fruit are heavy. And it's true, right? Like sometimes you're like, I can barely carry this. And it's like, yeah, but it's full of blessings. It's like full of blessings, but it is heavy. It's hard. And these wonderful babies that I loved so much. And I was so very challenged at this time. Very challenged. And looking back on it, I really just think I was so young. Even though I had been a believer for many years since I was, I don't remember not being a believer. I had been a believer for many years, but I was still, you're still just a young adult. You're just coming into your understanding of what it is to be an adult who walks with the Lord, apart from the support of your, you know, apart from the structure that had been in place before. And so in many ways, I was beginning my own journey of personal faithfulness at that time. You don't have friends with you at home to see how you're behaving in the morning towards your children. You know, even your husband is probably going to work. You're alone. How godly are you being alone with the babies? You know, how faithful are you being here where no one else sees what you're doing, right? How faithful? And it was just a time of seeing lots of things in my own attitude that was not in harmony with God's word, or not, you know, it's lots of opportunities to confront those sorts of things. And so this brings us back to the theme of Pilgrim's Progress. When you become a mother, you are really switching from becoming a companion pilgrim to becoming a guide pilgrim, right? Now I'm bringing people along. I've been at this long enough. I should be showing them the way now. Right? This is my job now, to be showing people along. There are people looking to you daily to learn how to do this. How do I be faithful? How do I do this thing? When everyone is out of fellowship and having a bad day, all those people who can't even find their own pajamas are out of fellowship and having a bad day. Whose job is it to help them find the way out? Right? Whose job is it to say, this is the way? This is the way that we lay down our petty attitudes. This is the way that we follow Christ when we feel this way. This is why it was also a time in my life of the most, like, I just think children are hilarious in how much they reflect your own attitude, right? You're feeling fussy. You might even be wise enough to keep it all in your head, but you are feeling fussy doing the dishes, and a child will come in and fuss at you. Won't they? It's like, it's magical. You're like, why do I have to be doing this right now? Like, oh, like I just did this. And then someone comes in like, I don't want to do it. And you're like, don't fuss. And you're like, right, I won't fuss. And then I will tell you to not fuss. I will confess this. And then I will, without hypocrisy, tell these children to not fuss about what they're doing. Right? It was a state of constant reflection on your own spiritual walk. Constant other angles. Like, how are you really doing? You know, here's a child here to show you what you're not doing a good job of. It was a wonderful time. Very spiritually rich. So who is responsible, with a house full of children, who is responsible to remember the directions that you have been given, right? Who is responsible to say, nope, we have something we're supposed to do here. This is the path we're going to stay on. This is what we're going to do. Who will need to give an answer, not only for your own faithfulness, but also for the faithfulness of your children at that time, right? Your children need to be on the path with you. This is the job God has given you. Right? To bring them along. And this is the Christian life. Daily traveling to heaven. This is Christian mothering. Daily bringing your children along with you. The name of this conference is Courage for the Daily. Why is it that we need courage for the daily? Why do we need that? What about being a mother requires courage? It is the difficulty of it. That's what it is. The first major challenge, so the hero of Pilgrim's Progress is named Christian, and it is following his journey. And the first major challenge that Christian faces in that book is called the Hill of Difficulty, right? He reaches the Hill of Difficulty, and he meets there formalist and hypocrisy. If you have not read Pilgrim's Progress, the names are not subtle. They tell you right off the bat. Good guy, bad guy. We know right off the bat. But formalist and hypocrisy are there, and they suggest that he take the easier path, right? Like, there's no need for you to go up this hill of difficulty. There is no need for this. And they're saying, why don't you come around? And of course, what happens is that they go around the other way and they end up dying. So the Christian takes the difficult path. But this is his answer to them. Let the words of Christian encourage you. This hill, though high, I covet to ascend. The difficulty will not me offend, for I perceive the way of life lies here. Come, pluck up heart. Let's neither faint nor fear. Better, though difficult, the right way to go, than wrong, though easy, where the end is woe. Right? I think that this may be the little known homeschooling anthem. It's like, pluck up heart, let's neither faint nor fear. Better, though difficult, the right way to go, than wrong, though easy, where the end is woe. There is this desire to find an easier way than through the hill of difficulty. I mentioned that in many ways I was a young Christian, not a new one, when I had all of my babies. Young in age, not had been a Christian for many years. But much about becoming a mother changes you. It is simply changing the terrain of the difficulties and obstacles that you will face as a faithful pilgrim. For instance, I don't think I ever struggled with worry before being a mother. I don't think it had occurred to me, probably because I was young. I didn't know why people did worry. But once you had children, you start to think of things to worry about, right? Like, what if they fall out that window instead of napping? What if they, you know, you think of things. And part of that's a natural thing that God gives us, to be aware of what's happening. And part of it is a big opening for temptation. On the narrow path to heaven, there is no other quest. If that makes sense. You're on this narrow path to heaven. You get married. It is not like now, oh, guess what? New quest to have a good marriage. New quest to be a godly mother. New quest to raise your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. These are not side quests. It's just one journey. We're on our way to heaven. We're being faithful pilgrims, or we're not. There is no like, oh, now you're a mom. Leave this narrow path and go pursue being a great homeschooler. You know, or go pursue being a, you know, really attentive wife, or go pursue this. What we need to be doing is pursuing Christ faithfully daily. And that is how we are enabled and equipped to be godly mothers, enabled and equipped to be godly wives. And anytime we start thinking that there is a separate sidetrack that we have to pursue and do a good job there, it turns out that is the origin of idolatry. These things. If you think your duty is to stay on the narrow path of homeschooling to the celestial city of, I don't know what, I don't know what the destination is there, but the point is there is only one heaven and there is only one path there, and it's through Jesus Christ, right? It's daily faithfulness. And that is why there are many different paths that faithful Christians can be on and still be fellow pilgrims, right? We're pursuing Christ. We are fellow pilgrims. If you are on the narrow path to heaven and you have a child, it's not like a door suddenly opens off to the side and you're now on a different mission. You are not to be on the quest to homeschool well or the quest to shape your children into great Christians. You are not to be on a quest to do anything other than daily obedience to Christ. And this is really how the idolatry of motherhood happens. This is how the idolatry of family happens. This is how there are divisive factions within Christian child rearing. This is how that can happen. This is how you lose your vision for the faith and become obsessed with methods instead of principles. And this is the wrong way, right? And it's very easy to do this. It really is. Because you feel like, oh, now I'm pregnant. Now this is something for me to steward. You know, like now God gave me this. And so instead of pursuing him, we start pursuing some method that we think will most glorify God. Right? We like veer off, and pretty soon my dad will use the illustration of you get so into your methods that it is like you're on a freeway to heaven and there's the freeway to hell coming the other way, and you're honking it and waving at people who are driving the same model car as you going to hell and you're going to heaven, and you're mad at the people that are going to heaven with you because they're not driving the same kind of minivan that you are. And this desire to be following Christ clarifies greatly who our friends are. Who our fellow pilgrims are, right? Are you also pursuing Christ daily? This is how we lose our vision of the faith, and that is the thing that is so important for us to keep clear in our mind. What is the goal? Don't forget what God told us to be doing. If your eyes are fixed on daily obedience to Christ, you will therefore be being a good mother. You will therefore be being a godly wife. When you are daily obedient to Christ, whenever we set off to pursue just being obedient in our own ways, we're almost always off the path, right? We're almost always getting distracted, getting confused. The reality is that we must stay on the narrow path. Our children and the tasks surrounding their care and teaching must come with us, right? That's why it's difficult, because we're bringing them all along with us. The terrain of your journey will be difficult, and at times it will be tempting to find other paths. Women particularly have a bad tendency to equate difficulty with doing something wrong, right? This is hard, you know, like from the, you know, what else did you expect, right? Like, we're in a fallen world, having children, doing lots of work. Why do we think something's wrong that it's hard, right? Like, this was just really hard for me. It's like, well, yeah, of course it's going to be hard for you. I think this goes back to these weird illusions of hanging out under the rose arbors, right? We forget that the work of the Christian, like in Pilgrim's Progress, is constantly fighting through things. You know, like falling into the slough of despond, fighting against, at the city of Vanity Fair, you know, like fighting against worldliness and working through all of these different things. So oftentimes we'll say, why is this so hard? And we wonder what's wrong with our situations and our life that we're facing difficulties. The reality is that obedience is simple, but it is not easy, right? Difficulties are not to be worried about. They are to be faithfully dealt with. They're to be faithfully overcome. We spend so much time trying to make obedience easy, right? We think, if we just made this easy, but it's always plain, it's always simple, and we want to make it easy, and it just won't be necessarily. We are sucked into these things, like follow these steps to have a happy home. You know, do these 17 things every day, and everything will be easier. Try this curriculum or this method and this new approach, and your path will be easier. Follow my method to have a godly home in 12 easy steps, right? We have to have methods. We have to make decisions as we go forward. We have to grab hold of various tools along the way, but that's all they are. It's fistfuls of strong grass to hold on to as we scramble up the narrow path, right? Little footholds, small helps. The problem is when we put our hope in those things as though they will remove us from the difficulty of the journey, hoping that it might take us to an easier way. We become gullible this way when we think we can get out of the work of faithfulness. We become easy to persuade to step off the path in pursuit of something less simple but more easy, right? Something that we think will go more easily for us. When Christian and hopeful, back to Pilgrim's Progress, when Christian and hopeful leave their rest beside the river of God, the road becomes rocky and difficult to walk. So Christian persuades hopeful to walk in the meadow next to the road instead, right? Think, this looks so easy. This is an easy way. Like, here's the road. That's basically the road, and it looks a lot easier. This is called Bypath Meadow, where they soon get lost, trapped in a storm, nearly drowned in a flood, and finally captured by the giant Despair, who takes them to Doubting Castle. This would be funny if it wasn't so tragically accurate, right? We've all known these people, right? This is something that we have seen play out. We begin by choosing meadow paths that are beside the right paths, companions to the truth. Like, look, here's the path we're supposed to be on. That looks kind of like it, but it looks easier. Let's do that. Like, and oftentimes I think the reason we choose those is we think we could still deceive our friends that we're on the path, right? We'll just do the one that's right next to it. We'll just be here acting like we're all still doing the same thing. But we end up vulnerable to everything and locked in Doubting Castle. We all know people who've been through every part of this journey, and it usually begins with amazing ideas or exciting new ways. Oftentimes, women around them are intimidated by their insights, impressed by how easily everything seems to be going. You know, like thinking, wow, she's really got a new way. She's doing everything. It's just looking really great and slick for her. But everything blows apart at some point. And soon everyone will be asking, what on earth happened there? They seemed so committed. Do you know what I'm talking about, don't you? They seem so serious and committed to this. And now this is the woman who's leaving her husband because she likes to work out more and putting her kids in public school and abandoning the faith, right? Like someone who you thought was way more hardcore than you. Someone that you thought, oh my word, she's so into it. And then later, it all blows apart. It starts by finding a path alongside the way, an easier path on easier ground. Proverbs 22:5, or I think it's 6. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. It's a very well-known parenting passage. This famous passage is often seen as though we are training up a child in the way he should go. It's like we're showing them a map, right? Or like looking at a brochure with them, teaching them the way that they should go. This is the way you should go, and this is the plan that I have for your life, and this is, we think that we're giving them directions, but that's not the way that it is. We are supposed to be bringing them along in the way they should go, because the way they should go is the way we are going, right? They should be on the path with us because we're going the right way, and that's the way they should go also. Right? It's not like we're giving them a tour guide to something we are not actively in. We should be teaching them how to do it just the same way they learn anything. How do they learn to speak? Not through language lessons, but because you're talking all the time, right? Because you're doing this all the time. They're learning this the same way. We are not teaching them hypothetical ways of going for them to later apply it in their life. They learn like they're an understudy, like they're with us all the time, seeing how we do it, how we're responding to obstacles in our life, how we are faithfully thanking God for trials, right? This is how they learn to be good pilgrims, because we are being good pilgrims. Sometimes, if you've been parents for very long, I imagine you have an example from your own life of something that God appears to have chosen from your children that you would not have chosen. Right? Like something that is like, okay, we need to get through this. And I would never have picked that for my children. As a lightweight example of that, I always joke that like the stomach bug is God's extracurricular activities that he signs your kids up for. Because is there a mother ever who would have said, yes, I would like my kids to go through that? You know, like, yes, one thing I want to make sure we do is a long winter of illness. Like, that's what I would like for us. And yet, what kind of an unbearable human would it be who did not know what it was to be sick? Right? Your heavenly Father knows better for your children than you do. You would think, like, no, that sounds kind of like a lot of hassle. Let's skip the stomach bug. Like, I don't want to do that. But you think, no, it is so spiritually healthy for your children to know what it is to be sick. Right? To know what it is to be miserable, to go through all of this. And so that's a lightweight example, but there are many things like that. Caring for an aging parent, that maybe you don't have the freedom to take your children to do the kinds of things you would do if you didn't have that burden, right? But the best thing you can ever do for your children is your own faithful obedience, right? And so in those moments where you know that your faithful obedience is what seems to you to be a less than thing for them, like, I'm going to be obedient here, and that's taking something away from my children. We can trust God that this is how he has planned for them to learn to love him and follow him and make sacrifices and do what they need to be doing. There will be those things that God chooses for your children, that your faithfulness is the thing that will seem so hard to give them, right? You being faithful will seem like, but I'm taking away their fun Saturdays, or I'm taking, you know, something like that. I think the older your children get, the more these things you notice, because time gets short. You're like, wait, I was going to be way more awesome as a parent than this. Like, how are you this old and I have not done any of those things that I thought I was going to do? When Christian first faced that hill of difficulty, who was it that was offering an easier path around it? It was hypocrite. It seems like being a hypocrite would be easier sometimes, right? It would be easier to just tell your kids, just give them that roadmap and say, don't be a fesser. Like, just don't do that. Or you pretend to have a joyful spirit when you have anything but that. You're telling them to go be joyful. You want to put on the happy family costume when company is coming over, but otherwise you're living in despair, right? But the end of that road is always death. There is no shortcut there. It is easy to tell your children that you want them to be self-controlled. and it is much harder to show your children what it is to be self-controlled, right? But this is the point of not being hypocrite, but rather being Christian, who faces the hill of difficulty and will ascend it. It is easy to point the way to your children, the way that they should go, but it is harder work to be walking in it ourselves and bringing them along with us. But if we want our children to be faithful pilgrims, and we should want them to be faithful pilgrims, what we must daily model for them is the life of a faithful pilgrim. We do not teach our children about how they should be a Christian by using Christian early readers, although that's fine. You can do that too. But we do it by holding their hands as we walk faithfully in the Christian life. We tie our children onto our backs when we scramble up difficult sections. But the most important thing is that we keep going and we do not lose sight of the path of simple obedience, and we do not let them lose sight of the path of simple obedience. Gradually, our children become independent companions to us, friends who are traveling alongside us, encouraging us too. They bless us with their own insights, their laughter and joy and diligence, and their own desire to stay the course, to stay on the path. And what a gift that is. God has done us the great mercy of making Christian child rearing incredibly straightforward, even if, parentheses, when, it is not easy, right? It will not be easy the whole time, but it is always simple. He has shown us the way. He's given us the directions. He is faithful to provide all that we need. A good example of something that is simple but not easy would be in that phase that I already told you about. I think we had four, when we just had the four. But I can remember there were times we believe it's important as a duty of Christian parents to be bringing our children to worship the Lord weekly. So we would bring our children to worship and mostly not be in worship, right? We'd come hauling in with my husband and the two baby buckets, you know, and I'm holding on to two toddlers, and we get in there. And I can remember passing my husband, him with the two toddlers, me with the two infants in the hall downstairs. Like, we're way out of the service. Like, we would go to worship and not be there. Like, we would show up, and then we'd take all the kids out and work on that the whole time. In that time, four little kids or five little kids at worship, it was not complicated, right? It was simple, but it was not easy. Like, it was like herding a bunch of BBs, right? BBs that got loose with attitudes somehow. I can remember times when my husband, in like the father's room where the sermon is just being piped in, and I had Blair, our fifth baby, and I can remember my husband with four toddlers in four chairs in a row in that room, like just managing, like, sit, stay, nope, don't get up, you know, like just constantly tucking them all back into the chairs, working on it. It was simple but not easy, right? We knew the goal. The goal is to be bringing our children faithfully to worship. And now the kids are old enough, we can see the fruit of that in that we have those four children all taking notes in the sermon and commenting to us about things afterwards, right? They know they're supposed to be there because their parents made the sacrifice of teaching them what it was going to take to be there and taking them there constantly. It is an advantage sometimes to be able to look on it and see, like, oh yeah, that phase. But when you're in it, it feels like this is life forever, right? Like, I'm going to have teenagers in the row that I'm like, don't turn around and make faces at the people behind us. Turn, you know, get back on track. Be quiet. Don't do that. It was, you know, it was an amazing time. Now it seems like, oh, that was just a little phase, but it felt like a lifetime of work. One of the most wonderful characters in Pilgrim's Progress is a man named Mr. Greatheart, which I just love, and it also is in the Bible reading challenge, which Melissa mentioned. The first and the last thing that we read is Psalm 119, which is sort of a love poem to God's word. It's just a delighting in the word of God. And one of the things that David says is, I will run after your commands, for you will enlarge my heart. And as much as, the funny thing is, I read that, I noticed it, I moved on, and then it was like a week later. You know when you think, like, wow, it just feels like we've been leveled up again? You know, as your kids grow, this happens, where you're like, big ones I can think of is when we had a baby and a teenager, and all of a sudden you think, like, whoa, like, the kids, it's like you get the little kids to bed, and the older kids are like, whew, glad it's quiet, now we can talk. And you're like, did you forget to go to bed? Like, what are you doing? why are you not asleep right now? And then you realize, oh man, you're actually old enough to not need to do that. You know, we're spread eagle across, we called it doing the parenting splits, where you still have a baby, but you have this other thing going on. And every time we would think that, you feel this leveling up, we call it, you know, you feel stretched or you feel really challenged, like, I know what to do, but this is hard, right? I know the right thing to do, but it doesn't feel comfortable. I have thought of this verse many times after that. Say, don't worry. God is just enlarging your heart, right? Say, I am running after your commands. Lord, enlarge my heart. Like, give me the capacity to do this. And given that he promises to do this, I love that this character in Pilgrim's Progress is named Mr. Great Heart, like Mr. Man with a huge heart. And he's a pastor character. And as he's taking Christiana, which is Christian's wife and children, through, he's sort of a guide. He's a pastor character. When they come to where Christian was in Doubting Castle, he wants to go fight the giant despair. He says, like, I'm going to leave here and go fight giant despair because of the danger he is to all these other pilgrims. And when he comes back, having killed the giant despair, someone says to him, but was you not afraid, good sir, when you see him come with his club? You know, when there's a great giant coming at you with a club. And he says, it is my duty, said he, to distrust mine own ability that I may have reliance on him that is stronger than all. Right? And this is our duty too. This is the duty of every Christian, to distrust our own ability that we may have reliance on him that is stronger than all. Do you feel completely overwhelmed with the obstacles in your life? It is your Christian duty to distrust your own ability and the abilities of friends or mentors or bloggers or curriculum guides or whatever it is that you think, someone who has it all together, that you may have reliance on him who is stronger than all. Right? This is the Christian duty, relying on him. So one of the wonderful things in Pilgrim's Progress is how the characters are all named very straightforward things. And Christian had a name before he became Christian. He says, my name is now Christian, but my name used to be Graceless. And I love that line. But I think, oh man, how painful when you think of that in a mothering context, right? My name is now Christian, but it used to be Graceless. You know, you think, what are we more likely, honestly, to be saying? My name is fussy, but I used to be hopeful. You know, my name is harsh, but I used to be kind. My name is bossy, but I used to be gentle. My name is anxious, but I used to be pious. You know, like, when you think of, like, one characteristic that would name you, if you had a name, what would it be? The answer, obviously, for all of us, should be Christian, right? We should be Christian. Christian is not able to overcome all the obstacles in his journey because he, you know, it's not like, Mr. Anxious is able to overcome anxiety. It is Christian who overcomes anxiety, right? It's not Mr. Despondent overcomes despondency. It is Christian overcomes that in Christ. When you think about what character are you, you think all the people that you meet in your life are, on some level, you could boil it down to this kind of Bunyan characters. Like, oh, here's Mrs. Complainer. You know, here's these people that come in. And all of the people in your life are either fellow pilgrims or they are obstacles to what you need to be doing. Now, I have to qualify this because of the way people are about toxic people, or, you know, like, get all of the toxic people out of your life, because what I really want you to think on is not who they are, but who you are to them. Because in their Christian journey, they're Christian, right? Who are you? Are you someone coming up to the side to say, you know, let's just go around this way, it's easier. You know, let's just do this. Are you worldly wise, or are you the character in their life that is driving them? Like, there are wonderful characters in this, like hopeful and faithful and Mr. Great Heart and Mr. Standfast. Like, there's wonder of Valiant for Truth. I mean, wonderful character names. And you think, all of us are a character. Who are you to other faithful Christians? You know, if they met you, they see you, did you encourage them to stay the course, stay on the path, work hard, love God, pursue him, like, bring your children? Is that who you are in their life? Or are you something else? Are you a distraction to their walk with Christ, a distraction to their walk in faithful mothering? This is something that is always good for all of us to think about. We all are characters, and we all have characters in our life. And the most important one of all is the one that we take our name from, right? We are Christians because we are pursuing Christ. We are trying to raise Christians who will pursue Christ their whole life through all of their own difficulties that will be different than ours, right? We can't anticipate the obstacles that our children will face in their life. We can't anticipate all the situations where they will be tried. We can only show them faithfully how to pursue Christ in how we do it as we go along. One of the things that I really love, I love John Bunyan in many ways, as you can probably tell. I'm a big fan. One of the things that I love about him, this is a sidetrack, but I have to tell you anyways. He was a really gifted preacher, like very, very gifted preacher, who was imprisoned for preaching without a license. So he was thrown in jail because he would not get the permission of the state to preach, and he refused to get it still. So he spent years in prison. He was released once, and he immediately preached again and was put back in jail. And while he was in jail, I don't know all of his life, but while he was in jail is when he wrote Pilgrim's Progress. And at that time, I love to think about this because I know, knowing humans, that he probably wondered what on earth the Lord was doing with him. You know, like, I know that God gave me this gift of preaching. I know God, he was a powerful preacher and brought many people to Christ. And why would God want a powerful preacher in jail? You know, like, and he was just trying to be faithful, wondering why he could not preach, why he could not be serving God the way that he thought he would be best gifted to serve God. And he wrote Pilgrim's Progress when he was in jail, and it was literally, like, from a literary perspective, an amazing thing because it was a completely new genre, a completely new kind of writing, something that had never happened before. But more than that, it was God telling him, God putting him in a place where his regular faithfulness, his just trying to serve God where he was, even though he did not understand it, God said, no, I'm taking you out of preaching to all these people so that you might preach to millions instead of to thousands, right? This book, Pilgrim's Progress, has been more, it's the most printed book in the world, second to the Bible. It's been everywhere since the 1600s, still incredibly relevant to today. Because he was himself a faithful pilgrim, right? He wrote this because he was himself walking a path with us and bringing us along to show us how it's done. Just like what I'm saying we should be doing with our children, right? We should be faithfully walking through our own trials, faithfully pursuing Christ, and that will also bring our children along in that faithfulness, teaching them that. I found out in England, apparently, not in America, one of his hymns is very popular, and I think it's called To Be a Pilgrim. I'll close with this. It's a wonderful hymn you should teach your children, if only because I think it's the only hymn anywhere that references hobgoblins. I mean, you need it. You need it. I think it says hobgoblins nor foul fiends. It's foul fiends and hobgoblins. But this, I'll leave you with this stanza from it. He who true valor seeks, let him come hither. One here will constant be, come wind, come weather. There's no discouragement shall make him once relent his first avowed intent to be a pilgrim. Thank you.